If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
There's no time to kill between the cradle and the grave. Father, time still takes a toll on every minute that you save. Legal tender's never gonna change the number on your days. The highest cost of living's dying, that's one everybody pays. So have it spent before you get the bill. There's no time to kill.
Welcome to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Inside Tennessee is sponsored by the Tennessee Action Council, an educational organization dedicated to restoring constitutionally limited government and the Judeo-Christian values that made our country great. Visit our website at tn4action.com. That's tn4action.com. The phone number to call in and join the conversation is 718-305-7176. That's 718-305-7176. Thank you for joining us tonight. We have a great show lined up. We have Representative Judd Matheny, who's going to join us here in a few minutes. He's going to talk about his agenda for this upcoming legislative assembly beginning in January the 14th, is when it begins, and kind of get an idea, too, from him from, you know, what he kind of expects to see. It's an election year, so the powers that be will probably do everything they can to make this a condensed session so that everybody can get back to their districts and campaign. That's good and bad. You know, the less time they're up there, the less damage they can do. At the same time, important legislation is not necessarily going to get a fair hearing. There is so much legislation up there in any given year, even though they've reduced what they're taking in or what they're looking at, still a lot of ground to cover and not a whole lot of time to accomplish it in. And then a little later, we're going to have Bill Haupt, who is the founder of Tennesseans Against Forced Annexation, and he's going to talk to us about that issue. Forced annexation, and of course, we'll cover it more when he comes on. You know, you have a metropolitan area that decides some of the surrounding county property, county area outside of its borders needs to be incorporated into the borders, and they don't necessarily care what the people that live in those areas think. And in fact, those people, generally speaking, don't have a choice. So we're going to talk about all the ramifications and problems of that. Got a quick announcement here before I forget. Common Core, it is an issue in Tennessee. It's an issue across this country. I've actually seen it called Obama Core, and I think that's probably a pretty good fit. But Tennessee Against Common Core and Education Matters Institute presents Getting Down to the Core. It's not just about standards. Special guest is Dr. Duke Pesta, Academic Director, Freedom Project Education, and Professor of English at the University of Wisconsin, Wiscosh. Special guest is Victoria Jackson of Saturday Night Live fame. She is a conservative now, if you're not aware of that. Special guest is Dr. Chris Tynkin, Assistant Professor, Seton Hall, author of The School Reform Landscape. Master of Ceremonies is Kevin Kukagee. This is Saturday, January 11th. From 1 to 5 p.m. at the Embassy Conference Center, 612 West Due West Avenue, Madison, Tennessee. Tickets are $10 plus $1.24 tax online fees. Pay by check is $10. You can contact Karen Bracken at karenbracken@reagan.com. And another phone number for the tickets are 918-588-4227. So that's Saturday the 11th. It's going to be very informative. If you've got questions about Common Core, this is where you can get them answered at. I think in 4 hours they can answer the bulk of the questions that anybody might have. So that's an event you need to be aware of and do your best to make it to it if you can. All right. We've still got a couple of minutes here till Representative Matheny joins us. Want to hit something here real quick. A lot of us are fed up with what's going on in the country. And here's a little I'm just going to read a little portion from what a World War II veteran had to say recently. And this is actually excerpts or written excerpts from a YouTube video that you may have seen. Anyway, it's World War II airborne combat veteran Warren Boedeker has an important message for the American people. Let there be no mistake. The man is sharp, and he definitely has some pointed words for the federal government. The following are some of the most memorial quotes from his video, and this is a YouTube video. Whether our government likes it or not, we have to stand up for the Constitution and freedom that we have. The people will eventually say enough is enough, and they're going to rise up with their wrath and take the government back. Don't ask me how, but it has to be done. Life has value, and whatever the cost, we need to fight for that freedom and value. Beware the wrath of a peaceful nation. I think we're getting a lot of men killed for nothing. They're fighting for something that's not a worthy cause, and I'm assuming that's in reference to Afghanistan. And with the way this administration has run it, it's certainly become not a worthwhile cause anymore. You know, it doesn't make any sense to go all the way over there to fight jihadists when you have them in this country, and we have a president who appoints them, members of the Muslim Brotherhood, appoints them to the Department of Homeland Security. The people need to not rise up in arms, but to take a stand and insist upon the government falling back under the Constitution. If they won't do it, then we should get rid of them, insist they retire. I think we should have another party. We have no choice between the Democrats and the Republicans right now. And skip on down here just a little bit. We've shipped all of our industry to foreign countries. The American people need to wake up and go back to work. The most important thing I've learned is to stand up for what's right. If it costs us our life or whatever, if we can't believe and express ourselves and willing to give ourselves and our life for what we believe, and what do we get left? Nothing. A total control of us, and I don't like that. I want to be free. In my thinking and in my action, as long as I don't harm anyone else, I should be free. And the last bullet that I'll read here is, Germany was taken over because people didn't take a stand. And I see the same thing happening here. We're all asleep letting our country be taken over by these politicians, and it's being destroyed. It's time we take a stand. Now, on that note, retired General Paul Valley, a decorated Vietnam veteran, is also calling for veterans across this country to stand up and be heard. He's calling for protest in D.C. and in every state capital. I don't think they actually have a date set yet, but he's involved with the U.S. Patriots Union and Veterans Defenders to find organizations. And I know that here in Tennessee, sometime in January, Veteran Defenders are going to have an event in Nashville. And so as we find out more about that, we'll let you know what we hear and, you know, exactly where it will take place. I'm thinking right around the Capitol makes sense to me, but hopefully we'll have a good turnout. And you know, we have to stand up if we're going to turn things around. Or while we're waiting on our guest, I'm going to go ahead and take our caller here. We got Kurt on the line. How you doing tonight, Kurt?
I'm good, Dave, and yourself?
Doing pretty good.
Good.
So what do you think? Are veterans going to show up and stand up, or are we just going to sit back and let this place fall apart?
I wish I knew the answer to that question, Dave. I know that a lot of veterans will show up. The only question in my mind is, will it be enough? And enough is an unknown quantity at this time. It just needs to be really huge numbers in order for it to be, well, what it needs to be.
Right.
Something has to be.
And they need to stay focused, too.
Yeah. But just sitting quietly by, I had somebody posted something the other day, and I wish I had it in front of me now, but I don't. But the statement equated this, that neutrality in reality is being a traitor. You can't be neutral in this fight and be a loyal American. It's just that simple.
Well, I agree. I don't see how you can sit on the sidelines fight. I agree with you 100%.
It's the truth. Dave, just so you know, I can't post in the chat, but you've got a photo on there that's identified as the Alaskan. That's Boyd McPhail up in Alaska.
Oh, okay.
I had a Boyd. And of course, Ron Adcox is perennially here. We're glad to have him.
He's here tonight as well.
Yeah, Ron's here. Yeah. Anyway, want to say hi to them. But that's enough of the personal stuff, okay?
Okay. Well, what's the any news from Henry County? You're in the Henry County GOP over there. Anything hot?
Yeah, kind of, sort of.
I mean, hot that you can talk about a little bit.
There lies part of the problem. I was informed just this day that there's a judgeship seat open here. A judge that was a chancellor passed away this past year, and so that seat is vacant. And there'll be other ones up for election. We don't know if there's going to be any challenges with them or not. But we've already met. The Republicans decided to caucus instead of having a primary on this. And I was told today that the governor apparently intends to, quote, help us make up our mind who we want for a new judge in that seat.
What?
That's what in capital letters, two or three question marks. That's what I was told. Of course, you know how that's going to go over.
But that now, what's that court, judicial district? What counties are in that judicial district?
That's the 24th. That's Benton, Henry, Carroll, Hardin. Geez, there's one other. It won't come to me at the moment. Benton, Carroll, Henry, Hardin. I'm drawing a blank on the other one. Anyway, they call it the River District. It's up and down the Tennessee River.
The sold down the River District, apparently.
Well, that's what would happen if we sat back and just let it happen. This will not go quietly, okay?
Yeah.
This is all part of a bigger flap, as you know, about judgeships. The powers that be want to they want to appoint everyone to every position, and that'd be the people that they want in there. Never mind
what the people want.
Never mind what the people want. And well, Mike, Nashville does not have control of Henry County yet.
Well, we're going to definitely have to.
That's the latest news on that front for today.
Okay. Well, that's the day's dirty secret. I'd like to let you in on a little secret. Those of us who love America are about to roll out the big guns. We can't bring serious anti-communists like Joe McCarthy, Ronald Reagan, and Barry Goldwater back into the air, but we found the next best thing, and it starts Thursday, January 16th. Patriot, writer, broadcaster, and conservative intellectual Lisa Richards is joining conservativenationmedia.com on the 16th of January at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, with Rock and Roll Politics. If William F. Buckley are around today, Lisa would be his favorite broadcaster, and she'll be yours too. Lisa Richards, Rock and Roll Politics, starting Thursday, January 16th at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And we're waiting for Representative Judd Matheny to call in. We're going to talk about the upcoming legislative session starting in January. And, Kurt, I think this issue was going to be, I think having to do with the election of judges is on the ballot this year, isn't it?
Yeah, that's been on the stove for a while. It kind of goes in the same bag, I guess, with the deal about, you know, we changed over a long time ago from the legislature electing senators to letting the popular vote elect our state senators, which gave control of that aspect to the big money, instead of the people.
Our governor is definitely one of those.
I mean, everyone knows, I think, that the Haslam family owns Pilot Oil, and I think the Flying J truck stops are a part of that now as well. So,
yeah.
And some people wonder about some of the connections with the with some people that he's made an appointment with, like Samar Ali and
yep.
others of the Arabic flavor.
Yep.
And they want
the Islamist flavor,
say,
actually.
Yeah. Can you spell oil? How much oil is there in Saudi Arabia? We know the answer to that question. Well,
there's a little bit, at least a little bit.
There you go. There you go. That's all you need, I think, in order to be able to hook up the Haslam name to that agenda.
Yeah. Well, it would not shock me a bit. Would not shock me a bit. Well, we know he's certainly not conservative. Hey, anyway, I'm up against a break here, and we just had another caller pop up. It's not our guest, but just had another caller. I will get right with you as soon as we come back from this quick break. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this break.
Aren't you glad the so-called fairness doctrine doesn't apply here?
Hey, everybody. Rachel Ray here. Nothing puts a bigger smile on my face than cooking up a big meal for family and friends. But there's not enough room at my table for the 17 million kids in America who are struggling with hunger. These children, that's one out of every five, often have to skip meals because there's just nothing to eat in the kitchen. Yet there's more than enough healthy, nutritious food produced right here in America to feed every last hungry child. If only there was a way to get it to them. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks collects surplus food to give hope to hungry kids and their families all across our country. But they can't do it without your help. Join me in supporting Feeding America at your local food bank and at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
A message from Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. That's 718-305-7176. And we've got Danny Owens on the line, and our guest did just appear up on the switchboard. So, Danny, you have a comment and a question real quick?
Yes, a comment is, please let us know, let us veterans know from down the southern part of the state when to be there, what day to be there, and where.
Definitely
and,
will.
Now, yes, sir. Well, and this other was a form of a comment about the Governor Haslam. He's also ordered that the Common Core would never leave the committee. So what do you think about that?
Yeah, I saw that as well. I saw that on a blog. Here's what that's going to take. That's going to take everybody and their brother calling everybody on that committee, calling their elected representative and their senator and saying that we don't want Common Core. We want the legislature to actually vote on this. They didn't get an opportunity when he implemented it, but we're going to have to make enough noise to make it happen, and that's really all I know to say on that.
Amen.
But thank you, Danny, for calling in. And we have you take care. We have Representative Matheny on the line, and we'll go ahead and pull him up here.
Hey,
how you doing
Dave,
tonight,
I'm
Representative Matheny?
I'm fine. I'm sorry I'm late. I was in a negotiation that could not fall apart, but I ran as fast as I could. And of course, Danny's good company. He's good fill-in for me.
Hey, well, I understand, and I appreciate
I'm
sorry,
you. I'm
late. Hey, no biggie. Did negotiations go the right way?
I don't know. Things are starting to get kind of tense here with the start of session. We're gonna move at an extremely fast pace, and that's great for efficiency and everything, but it's not so good for states' rights bills and bills that really need to be vetted and heard well, because it's just not a lot of committee time to do that. So we're a little bit concerned. There's a lot of preordainment of certain issues, and then there's just the expectation that other issues just aren't going to have time to be heard.
Well, let me ask you, based on what Danny mentioned, and, you know, Common Core is a hot issue, have you heard anything about, you know, the governor doesn't want Common Core out of the committee, or, you know, he wants it to stay in place? Have you heard anything on Common Core along those lines that you can tell us, and what's your personal opinion of Common Core?
Well, all I've heard is rumor that, and I don't know if it's true or not. I know that Harry Brooks will give it a fair hearing. I just know Harry Brooks in the House Education Committee. I'd be very surprised if he did not. I think every bill will be heard in committee, and people will have to be put on spot on whether or not they support Common Core or not. I think those votes are necessary. I think it's necessary that we expose the folks that are lock, stock, and barrel in favor of Common Core the way it is, and that we also acknowledge the folks that are standing up against it and want to keep some pride of authorship in our curriculum here in Tennessee with our, you know, amongst ourselves. So overall, now I've reviewed some of the Common Core material, and some parts of it I've been impressed with, mainly the learning parts, how you learn.
Where has it actually been tested, though? I mean, it's on paper. It's some of it on paper. I'll admit some of it sounds good when they say that they are learning more complex things, that they are learning more advanced, and they're implementing higher standards. But they haven't. I guess I haven't seen anything out there that proves to me that these are actually higher standards. Oh, I think we just lost him. There he is. Okay, let me pull him. Are you back?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I hit a dead spot, I guess. But
okay, I don't know if you heard my question or not. In terms of the Common Core, I know you hear that it's a higher standard in certain things and that it's more complex, and so. But what proof have we seen that it is actually, compared to the existing or prior standard, that it's actually better, other than just people telling us it's better?
I don't think we've seen any conclusive proof other than, like you said, people telling us it's better. What we have seen proof of is that some more more disciplined regimens in education that we've put in place in the past few years have begun to work. And we have to have some competition and some regimen in education, as well as discretion from the teachers. But just what I don't want to see happen, Dave, is the federal government take over such a large portion of our education and then begin to use the carrot and stick approach, especially with funding, whether it be for teachers or for textbooks or for building loan programs, you know, grants for computer labs or whatever, and start holding those things over our head if we don't adopt additional forms of curriculum. And
yeah, well, that's
what
exactly
I've
what
seen,
they'll do.
Well, I know that's what they'll do, and of course that's my concern. And then there just seems to be a general tendency in the Common Core curriculum to kind of forget the past and worry just about the future, and that way just sort of, and it's an odd way of doing things. And you can call me an old man, I'm 43 years old, but it still just, it doesn't give me a warm, fuzzy feeling. The only thing that I have enjoyed about Common Core, just to give honesty where honesty is due, some of the comprehensive ways that problem solving comes about, and vocabulary utilization and word utilization comes about, but the facts or lack of facts that they use in coming up with those conclusions, especially in sociology and geography and world history and things like that, are leave something to be desired.
Yeah, and I think, you know, if they control, and we've already got a problem in our country, we have had for quite some time when it comes just to textbooks, and of course that's an issue even now. But in 20 years, if Common Core were adopted right now, the way they want it, the way they want to do it right now, what kind of citizens are we going to have in 20 years? What are they going to know about our Constitution? What are they going to know about our heritage? What are they going to know that's important to maintaining this republic as it was intended?
Oh, the average fifth grade child will know very little about what it means to be an American. They'll only know that an American is one of many peoples on the world stage.
Yeah.
And that's about it.
Yeah. Well, I hope you're right. I hope, you know, Representative Brooks gives it a good, thorough hearing. And
I hope he does.
That,
I hope he does. I'm going to go to St. Louis for a national conference on January 30th through February 1st, and I'm going to give a talk on what Tennessee is doing to stop Common Core and what we feel other states should do, too. And I'm going to just reiterate some of the hearings we've had and some of the things we found and talk to some other states and see what they're doing. And even in some recent negotiations with the Tennessee Education Association the other day, I asked them, you know, why can't we just not adopt this Common Core program but do a very similar program that at least meets the federal benchmarks, but we keep the pride of authorship totally to ourselves? And if at any one time the federal benchmarks go in a direction that we choose not to go, then we'll still have an education system that we know how to operate and that we've not given ourselves away to. And they just all high-fived me and said, well, there you go. That's all we want. Why give it away to somebody else and let Washington, D.C. dictate our curriculum?
Yeah, well, I'd like to see the Department of Education on the federal level just completely defunded. Defund that and Obamacare. It really needs to be a state issue. You know, they try to tell us that the Common Core as it stands right now was a combined effort of the states, but I don't have a lot of faith based on what I've seen. However, I do think states would be, you know, if you get the right people, they could come up with a few things in common if they felt were necessary. But I think we have enough people, educated people in Tennessee, that we don't need somebody from out of state, certainly out of the federal government, to develop a curriculum for us. I think we could do it on our own.
You're exactly right. And I think when they say that the curriculum was developed by the states, I think it was the academia, you know, academic elite in those states, many liberal, that worked yeah. on these things, because I just don't remember there ever being any workshops offered for my teachers and folks in my district to be able to weigh in on what needed to be involved in this. It came with a lot of money, and it was covered up in dark wrapping paper along with a lot of other stuff when we voted on it several years ago. And now here it is today, and we still have a chance to hit the brakes a little bit.
Hopefully. So, well, I'm hoping that we, you know, get a good full hearing and we're able to do the right thing on it. Now, what are your top priorities for this upcoming session? We got about 2 minutes to the break, but we'll go ahead and get started with your top priorities.
Well, I want to work to close some of the loopholes in the gun carry laws once again. And what I'm going to be doing in particular is working to basically state that the state of Tennessee claims the entire field on regulation of gun laws. So we take away the ability of a city park or a local municipality to ban guns just in their city or just in their park or something that it's either going to be all or nothing, and the state will be the dictator of that. I don't want to use that's a strong word, the dictator of that, but the state will dictate what the law is. So if all parks can carry, all parks can carry. And if all you know, hospitals can have them, then all hospitals can have them. If all cities can have them, then all cities can have them. And just claim the entire field. So that's going to be one. Another is going to be working with economic community development, and I've already engaged them a couple of times to help build a team to look at the recruitment of the necessary core manufacturers to come into Tennessee to set up permanently to make us a vertical, serious manufacturing site for handgun and rifle ammunition and shotgun. And that includes
Great.
Powder manufacturers, primer manufacturers, brass, bullets, everything that's going to take to make those. And that this would include tax incentives, fast-track assistance from EPA and the Tennessee Department of Environment and Conservation in getting permitting done. And it's just one of those things, you know, if you build it, they will come, just like Lamar Alexander used to say, build these highways and these car companies will come. Well, you build these powder factories and these primer factories and all that, and these ammunition manufacturers will come. And it will secure ammunition for our state for generations to come, plus provide the country with much-needed ammunition. We need people opening new ammunition plants.
Well, I agree 100%, and I think that's an excellent idea. And I don't know who in Tennessee would vote against that, but I'm sure there will be somebody out there. Let me interject here real quick. Let's assume that if you're listening to conservativenationmedia.com, you're a conservative. You love America just like we do, and you don't want to get caught short in case the leftist government drops the ball and leaves the country and your family unable to get the basics of life in an emergency. Since that's the case, you're going to want a supply depot to get everything from patriotic gear to survival necessities to outfit and protect you and your family. And your pipeline to those essentials is right here at conservativenationmedia.com. Just go to our website, conservativenationmedia.com, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. That will take you to the world's best-known warehouse for all your conservative and emergency survival needs. Wave your flag and be ready for whatever the future holds starting right now. Just go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the Patriot Depot banner to join the conservative revolution where America always wins. Representative, we're going to take a quick break, and when we want to come back, I want to talk about the issue of lead, especially considering what just happened in Missouri and what you're going to propose in the upcoming session. Don't go away, folks. We'll be right back after this short break.
I started going cold turkey. Well, at least when I'm in the car.
I know I shouldn't do it, but it's so hard to stop. That's why I hide it from myself, so I won't be tempted.
I used to do it all the time. I stopped by locking it in my glove compartment.
My friend used to do it way too much. Now I turn it off when we're in the car.
My solution is simple. I just don't do it.
There are lots of ways to stop yourself and others from texting and driving. How will you stop? Tell us at StopTextStopWrecks.org, brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Dr. Martin Luther King said, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, and the worst injustice imaginable is the wrongful conviction of an innocent person. I'm Sam Thurman, host of A Just Cause Coast to Coast, Tuesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 Central, on conservativenationmedia.com. We take a look at what happens when innocent people go to jail as a result of bad evidence, wrongful prosecution, and dishonest witnesses. We use real cases of actual Americans who've been wrongfully convicted. A Just Cause Coast to Coast, Tuesdays, 8 Eastern, 7 Central, conservativenationmedia.com.
Welcome back to Inside Tennessee and Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. Phone number is 718-305-7176. That's 718-305-7176. And we're talking to Representative Judd Matheny. Right before the break, Judd, you mentioned that you were going to propose legislation to basically encourage manufacturing of ammo in Tennessee. Now, as I understand it, I think it was Doe Run, I believe that's in either Missouri or Arkansas, was the last lead smelting plant in the country. It was the EPA just pretty much shut it down recently?
Yes, they basically made it impossible for them to operate under their current conditions. Of course, they're sitting on one of the largest lead deposits in the world right there. And it is going to create, once again, it's going to create more constrictions in ammunition. We have been getting away in recent years from, you know, all lead ammunition going to some steel core and some other things, but it will impact the way we shoot, how we shoot, how much it costs to shoot, unless this can be reversed. And once again, if a state shows some leadership and engages the federal government and says, we want to put such a plant here, that can smelt lead, that can recycle lead, that can do any number of things in order to make lead bullets, then we want to be able to do that. So I think there's always going to be a way. I think it's also some of the firearms manufacturers I've been meeting with are have been doing some R&D with everything from high density plastic type ceramic bullets all the way to just pure steel core bullets, as well as a lot of different steel casings and hard plastic casings even for single use firings. So there's a lot of ingenuity going on out there. So just the standard, we may find that the standard brass and ball isn't going to be just the standard anymore one day. A lot of ammunition out there that is caseless, that's fired electrically now in military weapons. Still has some unpredictability to it, but we're getting better.
Yeah. So do you think that you'll be able to actually do some of the lead, or we end up just doing these using these alternative materials?
Well, I'd like to do the lead. Of course, right now, the industry's saying the only place they're going to be able to get it is from car batteries. So there's going to be just a huge run. You watch a core car battery price go up a couple of dollars probably in the next few months.
But, yeah.
There is a slight possibility of reopening Doe Run, but it probably is not going to be under the current administration. This is just another way of making it tough on the Second Amendment advocate.
Well, you know, I think we talked about this a little bit last time, or maybe it was another conversation in reference to in, I think, 2010 or 2011, Senator Beavers passed the Tennessee Firearms Freedom Act, which basically put anything manufactured in Tennessee, basically took it out of the hands of the feds, or that was the interpretation of it. Obviously, the ATF told all the gun dealers not to pay any attention to that, that they were, in fact, still under their jurisdiction. But, you know, if you opened up something here in Tennessee, I mean, and I know it'd be a stretch with the current leadership, but, you know, I don't know if that's not a place to make a stand in terms
if you had an attorney general or an executive that would stand up for your state law, as long as the weapon is built in Tennessee and it's sold in Tennessee, and its primary use is to be in Tennessee, especially if most of its components come from Tennessee, I think you should be able to regulate it as a Tennessee weapon. And
ammunition, that should apply.
Same thing. And you would have to, but it would take, of course, you know, it would take an attorney general who would, number one, have to be pro-gun and who'd have to be pro-constitution and would also have to be, American. I hate to say that, but.
Three strikes and ours is out.
I understand that they're very sophisticated in the way they look at their opinions, but what's right is right and what's wrong is wrong, and they've allowed patients to split so many hairs that the good guys are getting leaned out fast.
Yeah. Well, we'll go to take a call real quick. Kurt's on the line. I think he might have a question or a comment. If I can get him to pull it. Kurt, did you have a question or a comment for Representative Matheny?
Yes, I would. And by the way, Representative, I want to wish you a belated Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Well, thank you, sir, very much.
One of my questions at the moment is, if you're in a position to be able to discuss it here now, where we stand on this proposed joint legislative sessions for hopefully sometime after the first of the year. How's that coming?
Well, I would not be telling you the truth if I told you it was going well. And I'm meeting a lot of opposition. I'm not ready to throw in the towel yet, but sometimes I'm getting frustrated and getting close to that. It sort of befuddles me that all the intellectual capability we have in the House and the Senate, that we can't hold a simple meeting with our federal legislators. But I am working it, and I'm working it extremely hard, and we'll know very soon whether or not it's going to happen for sure, and if it doesn't, then we'll sure know why. I assure you that.
Okay.
But what arguments against it? I'm sorry. What have been the arguments against it?
The arguments against it primarily been that it's not our issue to deal with the federal government. We're elected to deal with state issues. It's also that this is nothing but grandstanding because Lamar Alexander has a legislative opponent. It has been absolutely Lamar Alexander has been mortified to appear at the event. So he's done everything he can in every direction to, and many in the Republican establishment have obliged him by not facilitating the execution of the event. And a lot of little things like that that all add up to catastrophe. And it just, I can shoot every one of them down with excellent information and I think we have every right in the world to engage our federal representatives at least once a year, if not every single day, if we choose to. We are a donor state, and 60% of our money comes from them and in our budget. So we've got lots of standing to speak to them. It's just that I think many in the establishment don't want to go out of their comfort zone. They don't want to ask anybody any questions that's going to make them feel uncomfortable. And they don't realize the mess that we're in, Dave. Or if they do realize it, their timeline to deal with it is radically different. Put it that way.
Yeah. Kurt, you had another question. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Well, that's okay. He just finished answering my second question there. I want to know where the pushback was coming from. Now I know.
Yeah. I wonder if Obamacare covers spinal implants for politicians.
You know, that's a great answer or a great question.
Well, we're still the freest country on earth as of right now, and those of us who love America know that the Constitution is a reason for our liberties. ConservativeNationMedia.com isn't going to let those leftists in D.C. take our freedom away, and our constitutional expert, Matthew Opalowski, is leading the charge. Join Matthew every Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central, for the Liberty and Constitution community to learn about our rights and freedoms under the greatest governing document of all time, and what you can do to protect your liberty under the Bill of Rights. The Liberty and Constitution Community with Matthew Opalowski, Thursdays at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 Central on ConservativeNationMedia.com, where America always wins. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance, and we are speaking with Representative Judd Matheny. Back to you, Judd, in terms of what's coming up in this legislative session, January 14th.
Well, we're going to hit the ground running fast. We're looking at about 10 weeks of actual session time. You can see there may be an attempt at judicial redistricting to come back up. I intend to stop that if that's the case. You may see, you will see a lot of Common Core activity popping up. You'll probably see some anti-Obamacare bills. Some of them are going to be fairly sophisticated. Some of them will probably be just more statements than have any reality of being passed. Of course, you'll have a budget that's north of $32 billion, probably approaching $33 billion. And looks like we're sitting around an $80, $90 million budget shortfall right now, which is something we can absorb because we have about $700 million in our rainy day fund, but it still shows us that we can't cut loose anywhere. We have to be very tight, especially with the direction the federal government's coming. I think an extension of unemployment benefits to the 1.3 plus million Americans that just lost again is going to be a big issue. But of course, the states have to vote to extend those in order to receive that money. So that could be quite a contentious vote here in the state of Tennessee to do that. And wine and grocery stores, I think, will be settled this year finally. And I said it last year, but it was pretty wrong. But this year, I think it's going to be settled, and you will be able to buy wine in grocery stores, and you'll be able to buy grocery items and convenience items in liquor stores, is my hope.
And, let me ask you this. I mean, with all the important things going on, how does wine and grocery stores I know it's been there for a while. I know that this is not the first year, and last year wasn't the first year. But with all the stuff that's going on, it just doesn't seem to fit the times in terms of things that need to be focused on.
Just wait for 2 weeks and look at the 1,800 different topics that are filed in legislation, and then you'll be glad wine and grocery stores is being heard, not some of the other stuff you're reading about. I'm serious.
Okay. Well, that's scary. Actually, it's sad is what it is.
Yeah, but it's true. It's true, I assure you.
So we're waiting on the bilateral commission. You are going to try to do something in reference to getting the, you know, ammunition manufacturing here. And that would be, I'm assuming, maybe setting aside some state dollars for it or incentives of some sort.
We're putting together an actual task force to be vigorous in going out and recruiting it, setting it up. Doing due diligence,
right,
to find out what we need and where's the best place to put it, you know, engaging experts in such conversation.
Yeah.
I want to approach it just like we would approaching any other, you know, major headquarters and manufacturing operation that we want to come here. What do you need? How can we help you get it here?
Right. Back to the guns and parking lots bill. Now, they knew there were problems with it to the end, you know, last year when they passed it. And I've heard different things. You know, I saw some things where Speaker of the House Harwell expressed no interest in going down that road again. But I've heard other things from different channels. What do you think the odds are? Are we going to get it right this time? Or?
Well, if you remember, we were told one thing by a couple people, and we sensed another thing. We sensed that we were told that you couldn't be arrested or charged criminally if you had your gun and your permit in a private parking lot. Well, I actually asked for a DA's opinion, district attorney's opinion, or attorney general's opinion to satisfy that once and for all. And I kind of made some people mad because I exposed what they thought they were hiding, and it was that, yes, indeed, you could still be fired according to Tennessee state law and by that bill. So that loophole needs to be closed. So it remains to be seen if we're going to be able to close it or not. And it's just that simple. The intent by the General Assembly was to close that loophole last year. The intent by at least one of the sponsors, and I think by some of the lobbyists that were riding with that sponsor, was to try to act like nobody would notice that. And it made it through, but then that flaw was found. So, do what we can. You still there? Hey, David. Hey, Dave.
Jed, I don't know if you can hear me or not, but we seem to have lost him.
I can hear you.
Well, I don't hear Dave, so I don't know what's cooking. He should be back to you in a minute.
Okay, man.
Of course, his internet service could have gone down. That happens over there occasionally.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it happens everywhere, I guess, occasionally. So there you go. Well, apparently, Boyd can hear me there. I guess if Boyd hears me, the rest of them can also do hear him. Here's a question. I guess it's just a generalized question, Representative Matheny. What would you have a list, or could you make a list of things the general public could do that would be beneficial to the cause in this Common Core battle that we've got going on?
I think we can. In fact, several of those, the Tennessee Eagle Forum. If you're familiar with them at all, if you go to their website.
Yes,
and,
yes.
Bobby Petrae probably has on her website
a number of action items and things already on her website. I would definitely go there. I would go to the Kathy Moore Cardoza.
I'm familiar with her too.
Yeah, I would get. I would say they're the leading educators on what can be done on any level to oppose Common Core, and I'd go to them first. In fact, I'm going to them to prepare for my speech in St. Louis on our comprehensive stoppage.
Yeah. Lori Moore is most excellent on that.
Yes.
And of course, so is Bobby. Bobby's excellent at anything she goes to do. But I think Lori is probably more focused on that one area where Bobby spreads out and covers
so many different things. Yes, you are correct, sir.
Yeah.
You are correct. Well,
okay.
Sounds like Dave might have lost out on us.
It appears that way. I don't know why he hasn't been able to pop back up. I don't know. How much time had you planned on spending? Did you have a deadline that you need to get out of here by?
Well, I told him about 45 minutes. We've about hit that. I mean, he can try me back if he needs to. That's not a problem at all.
Okay. I'll leave that in his ballpark then.
All right, sir. Well, it's good to talk to you, and thank you for what you do, and I'll call Dave Marr to make sure he's still alive.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Matheny. As always, we appreciate your great work up there, and good luck on that thing with the joint session. I know that's, based on what you said earlier, I know that's a hard battle for you, because I know enough now about how things work up there that it's, if they're against it, it's going to be a hard fight.
Well, yes, sir, you nailed it, and it just behooves me why it can't be simple, but oh well. Well, we'll talk to you soon, sir, and thank you.
Okay. Thank you again,
okay.
Representative Matheny,
yes,
and we'll see you later.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Okay. It sounded like I thought I heard Dave pop back in there just for a second. Bing, are you on, Bing? Okay, apparently not. Well, Michael, kind of caught me flat-footed here. When you said keep it going, I wasn't prepared for anything like this. I think that one of the most startling things to me out of what we've heard so far here tonight is the fact, if I remember correctly, Judd used the word regarding Lamar Alexander, that Lamar was mortified at the idea of appearing before an event such as what they've been talking about here, this joint legislative session, I believe, in which our two state senators and our state representatives, our U.S. congressmen, would attend this session. That makes a screaming statement, as far as I'm concerned, about the person, the attitude of our Senator Alexander. And I think this should be used in this upcoming election campaign. Here I go. I'm gonna blow my chairmanship of the Henry County GOP, but frankly, I don't care. I've always known that before it was over with, Nashville would know where I stand on that issue, as well as several others, and they wouldn't like it, but again, I don't care. So there you go. When a U.S. Senator is so incensed at the idea of appearing at a state legislature session, that screams volumes about the character, the nature, the mindset
of that senator. Of course, we already knew a lot about that mindset. So it's really not a surprise. I guess to me it's greed. Everything is measured in some way or somehow in degrees, whether you lay on a scale of 1 to 10 or 1 to 100 or whatever. It advances up or down in degrees or numerically. Alexander's ratings just took another dive. He's already in subpar because of things that happened before. But this is unheard of. This is a benchmark in low-life politics that he would refuse to, with the legislature of his state. And yes, Michael, I understand that he's above us. I would say that most of them up there are in that same boat. I know there are congressmen up there who I campaigned for when they ran, worked hard. And for a while, after he went to D.C., I'm sorry. Every so often I would get a phone call from his lieutenant, I'll call him, and he'd say, the congressman wanted to know what you thought about this particular issue or whatever. Well, that didn't last long, because at a meeting in Jackson, Tennessee, shortly after he was elected to Congress, he sat across the table from 19 or 20 others of us in the 8th Congressional District Tea Party Coalition. And when he was asked about the continuing resolution on the budget, this was back right after he was elected, "I will never vote to raise the budget ceiling," was his statement. At a later meeting, I don't know, a couple, 3 months later, the same question was put to him again because that situation was still hanging fire. He reiterated his statement, and he pounded on the table with his fist at that point in time. He said, "I will never, ever vote to raise the debt ceiling." He did. Needless to say, the communication between him and I was never the same after that. So, yeah, the Tea Party activists during these past few years did so much. And now the Republican establishment treats us, well, like hobbits, I guess. If you're not on Tread M, you won't know where that came from. If you are on Tread M, you know what use. But, yeah, Michael, you're right. His voting record has been pretty pathetic. However, we are very well aware that through, that congressman is a big farmer, him and his family. And we are well aware that he has garnered, since he's been in the office, somewhere in the neighborhood of $3 million in farm subsidies. So he's buttering his own bread pretty well. So there lies the pain, Gus. People like me and you folks that are listening in over from Traditional American Movement, those of you that are not there or that are not members, we wish you were. But I know the reason I say that, I know all those folks, and there's probably some guests on here with whom I'm not personally acquainted. But I figure that you're a lot like us, or you wouldn't be here, which that alludes to one of the commercials that Dave and others use on these Conservative Nation media radio shows when they make the statement. Let's assume that if you're listening,
to conservative nation media that you are a conservative. That's a pretty safe assumption. So yes, the people like us that are in this chat room and listening on this phone call, we've been walked on for far too long. And our turn is coming. If we'll take advantage of it, here lies the heart of the problem. Are the people going to engage? Are they going to activate? I don't know the answer to that question. To a certain extent, I know that a lot will activate, but the number, the total number, is the big question mark. It doesn't take 50% plus one to have a revolution, but it takes 50% plus one or somewhere in that neighborhood to have a successful revolution at the ballot box. And that's what we need. That's what we want. The other is a last-ditch effort. But make no mistake about it. If it comes to that, that last-ditch effort will happen. No one is going to come to my door and take away a firearm from my possession. There are several other things that no one is going to do while I'm standing. If I'm too old to move, they may get away with it. But as long as I can sit in my chair and see the door, there's got to be a problem before it's over with. And there are a lot of people that way that I know personally. I saw some more evidence of it yesterday, if I had needed more evidence. We had a gun show here in Paris. Only the second time, to the best of my memory, that we've had a gun show here. It was pretty well attended on Saturday. I didn't go Saturday, but I did make it out there a while yesterday afternoon. And I sat some and watched the people that came through there. A lot of them I know personally, a lot of them I don't. Never saw before, but you can look at people. And you can at least start your assessment of them. And I want to make a comparison here. Go to a gun show sometime and just people watch. Just watch people for a while. And then, for a comparison, go to Walmart. Just go in the door at Walmart and find yourself a bench over there fairly close to the door. And you sit and people watch. Start. These are not the same people that you see at the gun show. At a gun show, you don't see very many vapid expressions on faces. You see people that are aware, most of whom have at least a modicum of intelligence and education. You know what you see at Walmart. And if that sounds, Guy, I'm sure it sounds something. I'm not exactly sure what the word is I'm looking for. That's class warfare, something, I don't know. Maybe. Well, I hear you, Dave. Are you hearing me? I'm sitting here blabbering away.
I hear you. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you. I don't know whether the rest of them can or not. I guess they should be able to. How about it, folks? Can you hear Dave?
Let me see if I got Bill on. I know I've already lost Judd. Let me see if I got my next guest on the line here.
Yeah,
Bill, can you hear me? Bill, can you hear me? Bill Hopp. Kurt, do you still hear me?
Yes, I do, and they say on the chat that you're coming in loud and clear. Okay,
that's great. This may be my last show. I've had about enough of this stuff. I can tell you that right now.
Well, do you want to try and see if you can get Bill back, or did you have him at all?
Well, I still see his. He's lit up there. I should be able to hear him.
Go ahead.
Let me try this other number here.
All right.
I've got Boyd McFall on this line. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, Dave. I was going to compliment Kirk on his offhand substitution.
You did a good job, I'm sure. I appreciate him being here. He squares me away a lot, I'll tell you.
Thank you.
Bill Hopped, are you on the line? I see your speaker's lit up. No, he just dropped. Okay. Well, Boyd, you got a question or a comment?
Actually, no. I knew Kirk was hanging himself out there when you had your problems, and I was going to call in and have a chat with my buddy Kirk and see if I couldn't help him out while you were figuring out your problems. But, of course, he doesn't have the control board, so I couldn't get on.
Well, hey, I appreciate that. I'll tell you what, you guys talk. I mean, this thing is, I'm going to call Bill back because he just dropped off. So you guys talk for a minute. Let me call him back. Everything else is already blown, so let me see if I can get in touch with him here. Oh, there he is. Let me see if I can hear him. Let me see if I can hear him. Bill, can you hear me?
Yeah, David, the wonders of modern technology.
Yeah, pulling out what hair I have left, I'll tell you what. This may be one of the last shows. I'm about fed up with this. This has really gotten old. Anyway, all right. Okay, Bill Hopped, the president of Tennesseans Against Forced Annexation, and I've got your sheet right here. We're going to go hop right into this, and if you could give everybody a little background on forced annexation in Tennessee.
Yes, sir. Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you, too, David.
Merry Christmas, Happy New Year.
Yeah, and did see our good friend, by the way, and we're ready to go on that other project, so I'll keep you posted with that. Essentially, forced annexation has been an issue that has been of growing concern to the citizens of the state because when the original growth policies were inaugurated. It was about almost 20 years ago, and Al Gore hadn't invented the internet then, and nobody was really aware of what was going on, and the citizens were written out of the process. And today we remain one of three states that does not have a mandatory referendum to enable a city to literally take county land into their jurisdiction and provide them very little or nothing but a promise in return, except a tax bill. And I became aware of it and the problems we had with it and decided to start a citizens' movement to make people aware of it. And that's all that it really was. And it morphed into me assisting with House Member Carter and Senate Member Watson with some legislation last year. And it resulted in a CASR study, a summer study, which is a governor's committee that reviews legislation that they could not find an answer for. And we passed a moratorium on all residential and agricultural annexations. And as of today, we received a report from TASR. I mean, we received one, I guess, a few weeks ago. But it essentially made recommendations and obviously, it looks like they're trying to prolong the study for another year or so, especially until after the elections, when they decide whether we are going to have that coveted right to vote on the annexation of our property. So that's kind of where we stand now. We have a TASR study that says some favorable things. And some of the things, very things I mentioned in my report, that I was on the annexation committee, so was Mr. Carter, Representative Carter, and essentially they agreed that we need to look into the referendum, but they have also said that they want to continue the moratorium until after the election and continue the study until they can address the entire thesis of the original legislation, the growth plan. And so that's basically where we stand now. And we're going to have a number of bills run a next session that are going to address these various issues. And House Representative Carter and I are going to support the original bill, clean it up a little bit. And that's where we are now today.
So now, last year, it was just a year moratorium. They sent us a summer study. And of course, that's usually where bills go to die. But
yeah, right.
I don't think you or Representative Carter are going to let that happen. But, you know, you talked about the people in the counties that get in, they really have no say. And that's unique. You say most, we're one of how many states that actually allow cities to do that without a referendum?
Well, that's very interesting because we are only three, but I read the county report from the National County Commissioners Association. As you know, I'm very focused in reaching out throughout the country to get information. And it was interesting. I found that even the states that do not allow a forced referendum on the annexation still have a vehicle to protest it and de-annex or protest it and get a vote to remove it. So essentially we do have the worst set of laws, but we are three that can actually,
wow,
through ordinance, be taken into a city.
So once this happens to a county, to an area, let's talk a little bit about what it does in terms of taxation, services, you know, crime, development, and you know, the environmental stuff, and you know what happens to the rural areas whenever you have this.
Well, essentially, as we've talked many times, personally, it's a good plan to have organized development. It's good. There's some very good things, good for the environment, good for cohabitation between the cities and the counties. There's some very positive things, economic growth to the cities. But the negative things are the moving of population without getting conspiratorial. This is just a logical, sociological fact of life. It's the huddling of people into more confined areas. Cato Institute is doing studies on this all the time. Randall O'Toole, who helped me with my presentation for TASA. It's crowding people into city environments, and as you know, as a result, you've got crime, you've got housing bubbles, you have a rise in pricing, prices of homes, you have congestion, et cetera. And as a result of this, the counties are losing population and with that, naturally, representation. And eventually, as the counties are consumed, if we look at like Davidson County, there is no county left, basically. It's all one big metropolitan government. And this can eventually, by continuing to grab county areas after county area and absorbing that and becoming a large city, you are growing government. And then you get the opportunity to place another layer of government in there, you know, a metropolitan government like we do in Metro. So there are some, you know, some ramifications that are down the road are not too favorable. And as you know, once the county continues to lose population, they don't need the same kind of sheriff's department. They don't need the same kind of city services. I have a little water company out here. This is very supportive of the bill because we get our water from it. And they said, if we lose you, we lose a customer, you know, and we lose a lot of customers. So the ramifications are, they might not be obvious at first when it's one neighborhood here, one neighborhood here, but eventually this population shift into this area causes a great deal of problems.
A few more questions on, several more questions on this. I'm going to take a couple calls real quick. I'm going to go to Jerry here. Okay, let's
hey, Dave,
hey, Jerry, how
are
we doing tonight? You got a
good
question or a comment, Jerry?
Say, no, I just want to say Happy New Year to our guests, and I wanted to just continue on the points that Kurt was saying, but I don't want to interrupt our guests, so I'll just hang on and wait. Let him finish.
All right, appreciate it. Thank you, Jerry. And let's check his others here. Kurt or Boyd, do y'all have a question or a comment?
Boyd, how about you? Got anything? Well, until Boyd
shows up. I can't hear Boyd. Okay.
Until Boyd shows up, I've got a question for Bill here. When there's an issue of a highway, in this case, a state highway, I know this part, is looking at widening their right-of-way. We've got a two-lane highway out of Paris going north towards Murray, Kentucky, that they want to widen it into four lanes. And there's a lot of flap from people who don't want to give up the ground that is going to be required that they sell at a very cheap rate, I might add. Is the state the ultimate authority on that? It's not a federal highway, I don't think. What do you know about that particular aspect of it, Bill?
Well, to tell you the truth, I have been studying everything on annexation. I have 7 binders full of annexation itself. Now, I have not gotten into the eminent domain, and I'm not sure, you know, there's a fine line there where one falls under the eminent domain laws, which are very bad, by the way. We are one of the worst states when it comes to eminent domain also. So that's a gray area because the annexation bill that Mr. Carter passed did not have any effect on eminent domain, widening of roads, et cetera, obtaining parcels for specific highway improvements and access roads, the normal things that most counties, cities, et cetera, have to do. So I am not an authority on this. I run the citizens movement. I have a law background, but I am not a legislature or licensed to practice law here in this state. So my knowledge is strictly textbook knowledge, but I think that would probably fall under the eminent domain. You might want to get a hold of Chris Butler, who is Tennessee Watchdog, Google him up and get a hold of him because he works for the Franklin Center, who I work with in Virginia, and they're pretty tough as far as getting on these things and giving you a good answer and could quite possibly write something about this and draw some attention to the issue.
Okay,
Bill,
you said his name was Chris Butler?
Yes.
Go ahead. And he's with Tennessee Watchdog?
Tennessee Watchdog, yeah. He's got a Facebook page. And he also, you just Google it up. It's the Franklin Center, which is the major think tank of conservative think tank of America, actually, that has a person assigned to each state, to do investigative research and reporting in each state. They're a very good group, and they'll go after somebody if they see something bad, and nobody else is going to attack it. They're going to do some annexation articles Chris and I are working on for next session. I would get a hold of them, and if nothing else, Chris will investigate it and write some articles and draw some attention to it and give you some insight on maybe where to go further with that.
Okay, thank you. Sorry, I didn't mean to step on you there, Dave. Go ahead.
No, you're fine. Hey, Bill, now there's some political ramifications that go along with as well with annexation, things that happen when these urban areas start sucking up more territory outside of their current boundaries. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, well, you were the
red, one. Red and, the red and blue wars, I guess you could say.
Yes. Well, you were the one that brought some of these issues up to me when we've been working on other projects, and I started looking into it. You brought up the issue, why don't they do an annexation impact study on the counties? How does this affect the counties? Not just how does that affect the cities, but you've provoked some thought. And I started looking at the political autonomy of our counties. And if you look at some of these largest cities we have in this state alone, look at Metro, Nashville, Shelby, Memphis, they're quite blue. And if you look at our political makeup of many of our rural counties that are agrarian in nature, they're very small, nice, well-kept, well-developed, well-managed communities. They have very specific needs that are quite possibly different from the needs of the metropolitan areas. Well, I looked at the map of the United States, and I said, you know, why can't conservatives win elections? Obviously, when you have a blue fringe on what's not one, the left coast and the right coast. And I started equating this to what's going on in the state of Tennessee. Whether it's a blue or a red issue is immaterial. The county has different needs and different political needs than those in the city. But if you look at this as a pattern, which I do as a political scientist, you're looking at the movement of population into the more densely affluent areas, and we have a representative government, which is represented by population. So it's a pretty easy analogy to say that this is happening within our counties.
But once these counties get sucked up by the local metro area, the government, you're normally talking a little small community in a county that now all of a sudden they're annexed from, say, you know, Nashville, Memphis, wherever. Well, they're still fairly small in number. And generally speaking, even in Tennessee, your metro governments are liberal, certainly more liberal,
right,
liberal than what they are out in the rural areas.
So, no question about it.
Their conservative views and voices and desires are going to be pretty much muted by what they've just been drawn into.
Yeah,
correct?
Well, they're squashed. They're squashed, yeah. And you're right. Yeah. And as this continues to happen, as it has in the United States today, we've had the population movement, whether it's planned or not. I try to stay away from conspiratorial theories. I have my own theories. You and I have very similar views. When it comes to this particular issue, this is a nonpartisan issue. Whatever the needs are of the county are not going to be met if the representatives they elect are primarily going to be, their campaigns are financed by the cities, the people with the money. But from our red counties, yes, are turning blue through this process of annexation. And we were looking at it from another perspective, the opposite perspective. What happens to, like, a Memphis? There were 64% African American population, and they start bringing a bunch of rich white guys into the black community. Well, it's the same thing. You know, we were looking at it from that aspect, but now we're looking at it, now when we turn it around and look at it the opposite, it's happening much worse, the disenfranchisement of our rural counties. So it is something to be very concerned about.
Well, and the counties lose tax revenue. I think you said after 15 years, there's no longer the profit sharing on the taxes initial agreements normally have.
We had originally to sweeten the pot, to bring the counties to the table and have them buy into this agreement and make this deal with the devil. They said, we will split the revenue on the beer tax, the hall tax, and the sales tax for 15 years from the date that we take your land away from you. Naturally, they keep the property tax because that's one of the wonderful things about being annexed is you get to pay your own property tax to the city as well as the county. And the county said, great. Well, a lot of these annexations took place in the year 1999, 2000, and they're coming to an end. Well, you know, all good things come to an end, and it's fine to make a deal with the devil and split the revenue for 15 years, but if you look at the eventuality of this, why not say, wait a minute, why even bother letting them take anything without a fight, you know?
Well, and let me ask you this. How many of these cases with annexation have involved direct loss of property rights or infringement on property rights?
Well, you know, essentially, your property rights are gone once you are placed into what they call the urban growth boundary, which is technically a 20-year growth plan, which they can open almost any time they want to. I'm not a legislator. I'm not familiar with laws. I'm not real familiar. I don't know. They take 5 years. Every 5 years, if they think that they need to reopen this urban growth boundary, well, once your county commissioner gives you and puts you into that urban growth boundary, you have no representation. So therefore, your property rights are diminished from that moment on, because you can be absorbed into the city, sent a tax bill, and you have no say-so in the matter. So you've lost that portion of your property rights there. Then you are asked to accommodate new codes and new laws. And if you go to add a room on your house and you built it under county codes, and the city says, well, no, our codes are all different. If you want to build that one room, you got to rebuild your whole house, update every piece of electric wire there. These are the things that hurt. Now, if you're a developer, look at it this way. Our developers would rather build in the county. Why? Much cheaper, much less strict codes, cheaper land, cheaper taxes. They can sell the property, the finished property, cheaper. And they beautiful communities. You saw where I live. You've been to my house. A beautiful community out here in the middle of the rural country, you know.
Yeah,
HOA. Yeah. Well, I mean, a beautiful community. And the developers built and paid and made this community. And so they would rather sell homes in this type of environment than they would in the city. Well, if you're a developer and you plan on spending, you know, $1 billion on a community and you get halfway through and you're annexed, well, half of that community is built under the auspices of the old county codes. But guess what? The new the new city codes now apply, and it might cost you an extra 20, 30, 40% to finish the project. These are the things.
Mm. You're losing your property rights basically when this happens, you know, and so losing your property rights is, You know, that's one of the worst things that can happen in a free country. And, you know, one of the worst nightmares that can befall an American today is identity theft. It happens to you. It may take months or even longer to recover from it, if you can recover at all. Don't let it happen to you. Protect yourself in advance. Sign up today with LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service 24/7, 365. There's really nothing that comes close to LifeLock. To protect your identity with LifeLock and get 10% off their great service, go to conservativenationmedia.com and click on the LifeLock banner. Network may not cover all transactions and the scope may vary. That's conservativenationmedia.com. Then click on the LifeLock banner. You'll be very glad you did. We've got to take a short break. Don't go away. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. We'll be right back with Bill Hopp and more on forced annexation.
Americans have known Tennessee as the volunteer state since the War of 1812. Now, Tennessee is leading the way in another major conflict. The war to keep America's identity, values, and freedoms intact. Even if you've never walked in Memphis or hiked the Blue Ridge Mountains, if you respect traditional American values, you should know about the Tennessee Action Council. Tennessee Action Council fights to preserve American values, defend our way of life, and protect the U.S. Constitution. This isn't just Tennessee's battle. It affects every American who loves our country and wants to pass the real America, unstained by progressive liberalism, along to future generations. No matter where you are in this magnificent country of ours, Tennessee Action Council is on your side and on America's side. Go to TN4Action.com. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to volunteer for Tennessee and America. That's TN, the number 4, Action.com to stand for America now.
Inside Tennessee and Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. The phone number is 718-305-7176. And we are talking to Bill Hopp about forced annexation. Bill, so with the forced annexation, the cities, the counties really don't have a say, although the cities normally bribe them with, hey, you know, we'll continue to split the property tax for 15 years. And, of course, they say, well, this is, you know, development, sustainable urban growth, those are some of the things that they use, the phrases they use to get them into this. But like we say, they lose revenue, they lose power, they lose services, and they certainly lose political clout. It's even Tom Vilsack, the agricultural secretary, was talking about the loss of population in rural areas and the, you know, corresponding loss of political clout. But you guys are going to run your bill again that Representative Carter ran last year. But the great people at TASR, they got a bill they're going to run too. You want to let us know a little bit about that one?
Yeah. One point I wanted to bring up that's very important. The people in the city think, you know, hey, more money, more taxes, wow, mine will go down. It's quite the contrary. The annexation does not bring increased revenue. It brings increased political power, and everybody pays the bill for the extension of services, et cetera, and the hiring of police and all of that. So the people that live in the cities should be as vigilant as the people that are being annexed to find out that they need to come to the table. This is where we will segue into the fact what good the referendum will do. But TASR has pretty much confused the issue. They have been lenient in telling us, hey, yeah, we agree with you. It's about time we looked into the referendum. We looked into things like de-annexation, which, by the way, we're not even talking about de-annexation, because that's going to be a whole other plan to come up with how a city is going to be paid back for putting $1 million worth of sewer lines in and things like that. Right now, we just want to give people back their property rights, the right to vote. But Tassar is going to probably, again, I'm not a legislator. I'm nothing more than the gatekeeper of the citizens' movement. I started 3 years ago. We have each different leader of each different segment is their own leader. But what I understand, it looks like it's coming down the road where Tassar is going to have some type of bill. They've recommended carrying the annexation over for another year until after the election so they don't have to fight us. Then, you know, they get a free ride for 1 year. And so they could actually carry this on for 2 years until they annex everything within the urban growth boundary. And so they will probably run a bill to extend the moratorium, and there will probably be a few other bills just to complicate things. and then more than likely they can say, hey, you got so many bills, you don't know what you want. We got to continue the study because all these other things everybody wants. I know there are probably going to be at least another annexation bill run by another group. I don't know, but this is what I hear. So there's going to be a number of bills, but the Tassar bill, I think, is going to be the one that people don't want to support. I wouldn't. I'll put it that way. I would support Mr. Carter's bill or any bill with straight referendum only. Simple, sweet, to the point, bingo, it's done. Then these other problems will get addressed and fixed.
Now, how far did the bill get last year? I mean, I know it went to summer study, but how far did it actually get through last year?
By the time we hit the floor, we essentially had to make a deal with the devil to keep it alive because we didn't have the type of support we needed, good, bad, or indifferent. If you're dealing with something that is foreign to people that are in the major metropolitan areas, but yet very, very critical to people in Hamilton County and Shelby County, quite possibly up in your county, the more rural counties who are being abused. Well, this was the first time it really gained some traction because we did have a centralized movement here and an awareness built within Nashville. This bill, by the time we got to the floor, which was simple, right to vote, that's all it was, ended up with a moratorium for a summer study. And so that's what we ended up. And it was a moratorium simply on agricultural and home. In other words, the cities can go out and continue to annex commercial property for their growth and their economic enhancement, which isn't all that bad. You know, most big box stores do want to come in and take advantage of city services. But you get going to run into a problem where there's a big retail place in the middle of a big housing area, you know. Well, you know, how are they going to get their hands on that?
Well, I want to take a couple calls here and see if there's any questions or comments. And then I want to talk, you know, what you're asking for is the opportunity for the people to have a referendum on whether or not to be annexed. And I think that's only right and only fair. But, you know, I think with as messed up as our government is, federal and state, and, of course, you know, we need to exert more control over our state, I think citizen referendums are – that's something that we probably need a lot more of, and I know you know a little bit about that. So I want to check and see if we've got any questions here with our callers, and then I want to talk about that some.
Certainly.
Kurt, if you've got any questions or comments on the for Bill?
If you've got another caller on, let them get in. And, Dave, I've talked enough tonight.
All right. Boyd, have you got anything?
You know, we don't have county governments up here in Alaska. We have city and borough governments. And, you know, a lot of it is unincorporated area. There have been probably one, two, three, maybe four new second-class boroughs, which I would venture to say are equivalent to townships down there, or...
Well, we have counties. We have counties and cities and metro. That's pretty much what we have here.
Yeah, but the four new ones that have come up in the last 5 or 6, maybe 10 years, is the people that were out in unincorporated areas, mainly up and down our highways, did not want to become part of one of the existing boroughs that it was annexing property and lands. So they formed their own second-class borough so they can govern themselves. They don't have to put up with, you know, any codes other than what the state puts out or anything else like that, which stops them from getting annexed into one of the boroughs, going up and, you know, getting, you know, tax revenue, forcing building codes and all that stuff.
Yeah,
on. In fact, it was during the pipeline era when they were building the pipeline. We had some cities and boroughs go out and annex the property that the pipeline was going to be running through just so they could collect taxes off of it.
Never passed
now,
up an opportunity.
I was looking at for your laws, because I do have your laws, and I've been studying all 50 states' laws. You are one of the one of quite a few that allows you to self-incorporate into what they call a tiny town. And you have that defense mechanism, which a lot of the states allow. Tennessee does not allow that. The way our laws are written, basically, more or less, is you are very, very discouraged. In fact, they make it almost impossible to make a tiny town, what they call it, annexation through fear. And you're very fortunate to have that opportunity, which we don't entertain here.
Yeah. Right, we need a lot of things here. I got to interject here real quick. Our friendly local pilot in command and GOP spokesman Duke Brooks calls himself a paleocon, and rightly so, since it's clear that anti-communism is in his DNA. His parents were friends with Joe McCarthy, Bill Buckley, and Whitaker Chambers, so what would you expect? There's no truth to the rumor that he has a dartboard with Alger Hiss's picture on it, but you can get your weekly dosage of old-school conservatism, right-wing politics, American history, and hangar-flying radio on Radio Free America with Duke Brooks, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Central on conservativenationmedia.com, where America always wins. You're listening to Inside Tennessee on Conservative Nation Media. I'm your host, Dave Vance. We're talking with Bill Haupt about forced annexation. And, Bill, you know, the remedy, like I mentioned a minute ago, for this is a referendum, but I think a referendum, citizens' initiative, whatever you want to call it, could remedy a lot of our problems, because the politicians are definitely not fixing them. And I know you've had some experience in this area, so I want to turn it back over to you and talk about that issue a little bit.
Yeah, I pulled up the old annexation laws for Alaska, by the way. Very interesting laws, by the way. They're very lenient. Yeah, as you know, I had 40 years in direct democracy, which was they called the referendum process. And 1978, that was Jeopardy question on the first piece of legislation I worked with, and that was major tax reform tonight. And we were able to bypass a dysfunctional legislature and run legislation ourselves. It wasn't easy. We had to go out and get signatures, stand out in front of Walmart. We had no internet. We walked neighborhoods in the sun and sleet and snow. And the beauty of it was, it was difficult to get done, but we had to learn the law, all of us, especially the ones like myself that wrote legislation. We had to organize. We had people. People became ownership of that movement. And we were able to then take it to the Secretary of State. And it had to be right, or else it would go into the circular file. And
so this is California, correct?
Yes, this is California. But we're not alone. Almost half the states in the United States have, even Washington, D.C., that snake pit back there, they have the authority to bypass the legislature and do this directly through the people. And by doing this, nobody should be scared, by the way, to give the people that power, because the legislature can always undo it, as they've been doing, undoing to my tax legislation or our tax legislation that we passed. It's all done by a committee. It's not done by one guy or two guys. It's a committee. Everybody assumes ownership of it. That's the beauty of it. There's no egos, no nothing. Everybody gets a little bit of credit, feels good. We move on to the next thing. The legislature can undo it. But if it's so popular and the people want it, do you think they will? No.
It'd be harder for them. It'd be a lot harder for them.
Well, I'm not for direct democracy replacing representative government. But if the legislatures have that hanging over their head saying, well, if we don't act right, listen to the people and do what they want, then just maybe they'll do it themselves.
Yeah, well, and, you know, the people have to have something, especially in a situation like we're in here in Tennessee. You know, we have a governor that he really does not care what the average Tennessean, certainly not what the average conservative Tennessean cares about. You know, he's just in it, and when I say he's just in it, he's in it for his, he's going to do what he wants to do and what his friends want to do. You know, the business community, and I'm not putting down business, I'm not putting down people with money, that's great, that's fine and well, but there are other issues. You know, we do care about other things in Tennessee besides just being a business-friendly state. It's important to be one. But, you know, we have a lot of constitutional things we care about. We have conservative issues we care about. And when the majority of the state, can't get any response from its legislature, they need to have a way to go around the legislature, you know, through the people, you know, really put some people in the we the people phrase. And so I could think, you know, there's a lot of things that we could accomplish in Tennessee if we had a citizens initiative legislation or had the right to do a citizens initiative or a referendum.
Well, you know, once people understand it, it is really a powerful tool, because a governor, for example, California was smart enough, praise God, the gentleman that was governor of the state of California while I was got my BA, my graduate degree, and signed my diplomas was Mr. Ronald Reagan. And he had a blue legislature. When he couldn't get things done, he took it to the people. He ran his own bill. The governor ran a bill. The people wanted it. California passed major tax reform in a blue state. We had passed Prop 187, another very salient piece of legislation I worked on with a group of people. That was to deny illegal services. The DOMA, Defense of Marriage Act, that was the last major one I worked on. In a blue state, where they're probably more, you know, homosexuals, gays, lesbians, yeah, than there are anywhere in the country. Yet the people said, we want to defend marriage. So, you know, it really does give the will of the people an opportunity. Then you have a strong senator, like my great senator out here in Wilson County, May Beavers.
Yep.
She might have a powerful bill but can't get it done. So she gets it in the court of public opinion, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be great. That would be great.
And I
think we need something like that. I think that would be one of the most important things we could pass in Tennessee. And I think all the Tea Parties would just be right on board for that legislation.
Yeah, well, you know, how many times do we look at a bill, a great piece of legislation, a good gun bill, a good wine bill, a good whatever bill, and we have some great legislatures. Look at Mark Green, I'm just grabbing names of people that I know really strong, powerful, and yet they can't get enough people to get it done, and it dies. I mean, we got good legislatures down there, but they need help, you know. And this is just another tool, you know.
So when do you think, I mean, I know that you've got to get this annexation bill through, but when do you see the possibility maybe of somebody running the Citizens Initiative bill?
Well, again, I'm just a retired guy from California that came out of retirement because I saw a need to help out, and I'm just a helper, you know. You know, I do write legislation. I've got a silly hobby. I like to do that. But, you know, I think we have to fix the voting rights, the notification process, and how these guys are doing so many things behind closed doors. I think that's one bill that will probably need to be addressed sometime soon. And, you know, you've seen a copy of that. And the other one is a constitutional amendment, I think. More than likely, that's what that will end up being. And that's about 15 pages long to set up the process. And, you know, that will be really, really contentious because everybody thinks they're going to lose something. I say, you know, the sooner the better, naturally, as far as I'm concerned. But it all depends, too, what other contentious legislation is being run that session. Yeah, is it going to get lost in the first committee because there's, you know, people fighting about wine or guns or, you know, Common Core, whatever. Mike Carter had a beautiful scenario. He said, why don't we call this the Annexation Gun and Wine Bill? And he said, then everybody will come down and go, yes, for it, you know. So, you know.
Put them all together.
I don't know. You know, the time is right now, to give us a better voice in government. And I've always worked for 40 years in trying to give the people a better voice in government. And, you know, I don't believe in disenfranchising. I don't want to work like the left. I don't want to disenfranchise the enemy. You know, I'll disarm them, but not disenfranchise them. I want to do a better selling job and get my word out there because I know we can win. And because that's the kind of legislation that stays. And a people's initiative, if you can pass three bills like we did in California, in a blue state that are totally conservative ideas, what can you do in a red state with a lot of conservatives?
I know. I know. I mean, you just think about it. I mean, that's just, I'll tell you what, we could make that governor somewhat irrelevant if we actually had that that initiative. We could make that guy irrelevant. And I'll be honest with you, I think that'd be one of the best things we could do is make our governor almost irrelevant, at least this particular one, but I'm sure there'll be other bad ones in the future. All right, I'm going to take a call here real quick from Jerry. He's been on the line for a little while.
I'd just like to make a comment on the things that Bill's been talking about. And it's really important that we all get together and try to, you know, push what Bill is pushing there because, you know, people have to understand there's a lot of pressure on the other side for that comes directly down through Agenda 21 and sustainable development. That's the whole game plan with a lot of this annexation, too. Sure, there's taxes and all that other stuff involved, but there is backdoor pressure coming right down all the way from Washington on these politicians through the parties, and you know as well as I do that, you know, these parties, the Republican Party just as bad as the Democratic Party, they're not out for the people. They're out for the party, a good part of them. And we got some really good representatives like Judd and May Beavers and those folks that are really working for us and not for the party. But unfortunately, we got too many people who are more concerned with the party. And this Agenda 21 is a big thing that's being pushed all over this country. And this is all part of it. And we have got to get people out there to have a voice and speak up against this stuff and against this annexation and things like that because the most important part about what Bill was saying there is you're losing your voice. You're losing your vote. And that is so imperatively important that we don't do that. And people have got to wake up to what's going on and get up and start having a voice and taking part in the things that are going on. And, of course, that's our goal here with the Tennessee Action Council and this radio show to get people aware and get them up and get them moving and stop talking about it and start doing something. The time for talk is over, folks. The time for doing is here, and you better get up and start doing, or you're not going to have anything to do something about. And Dave,
hey, Jerry,
you know, you're doing a great job as a host, and don't let the technicalities upset you. You're a great host, and I'm sure anybody listening to the show agrees with me.
Well, hey,
Jerry,
I appreciate that.
But you're 100% right, and this is apolitical only because when we get into the chamber down there and we are on the floor, right away, everybody, you know what happens in the legislature when you bring up Agenda 21. You guys can bring that up. And that's where your job is so important. And Dave, the work that you guys got to bring that in and let people know about that. So when we get to the floor and we're in the chamber, we don't bring that up. This is just a straight right to vote issue, and everybody wants a right to vote. But what you guys are doing is so important, and I just wanted to let you know you guys do need to keep people aware of what's going on where we can't. You know, we can only go so far, and then we have to back off.
Yeah, well, we're trying, Bill. That's our goal, and we're trying to get folks to join this organization so we can have a strong voice. You know, I get so many people, I get tired of hearing them saying, what can I do? And I tell them, I can do nothing, but we can do a lot. So let's get together, join us, help out here, you know. And we just got to get people to start doing that.
Yeah, well, I'm finishing a book called It Takes a Movement right now, and it's about how we formed our movement together to get things done, and how we bypass all of these outside influences that try to derail us. And essentially, it's a movement. It's a group of people that will make this work. And that's what you guys do so well, and that's what we need to do. But unfortunately, we got splinter groups here. And why does the left? Why does the left? How many gays are in the country? I'm appalled. They get legislation passed all the time, and we can't even get one simple, stupid bill passed. Why?
And that's because they don't sit around and nitpick about this is most important to me, that's the most important to me. They take that 80% that's important to all of them, and they work on that, and they forget about the petty stuff that we're always fighting about. And we've got to learn to stop doing that.
That, you know, I learned that in California. I tell people I'd rather work in California than here. People think I'm crazy. Here, I'm a conservative. I'm from California. You know, and yet I had so much success, 41 successes in 40 years. Now, I only ran 1 year with a group effort, but it was a group. And now because there were a limited amount of good, hardcore conservatives, we got together on one cause. Here, we have so many conservatives that decide that they're going to go this direction, that direction, this direction. And I think
we've got to do a better job,
priority.
That's for sure.
Yeah, but they're good guys.
We're down to about 30 seconds, and I just had a new caller pop in. But, Bill, I want to thank you for coming on the show. I'll definitely have you back. I appreciate all you do. Jerry, Kurt, and everybody, thanks for calling and listening in. I'm going to try to get to this caller real, real quick. Before we go off, okay. Caller, you got about 15 seconds. You have a question or comment?
Yeah, Dave, this is Bob down in Lincoln County. I'd like to tell Bill that he can join the Tennessee Action Council. I don't see there's a big separation there.
We'd love to have him, and I'll get him the information.
Yeah, I would, too. He was acting like he couldn't join. I didn't understand when he gets on the floor and he's got to be separate. I didn't understand his comments.
Well, I think I know what he's getting at. I mean, he couldn't talk about Agenda 21 on the floor. Anyway, guys, we are out of time. Thank you all. And
but he
we
can
will
join Tennessee Action
next
Council.
Oh, yes, yeah. And I'll get him some information. Thanks again, Bill. Thanks for everybody for listening.
Dave.
Okay,
Dave.
I sure will. Thanks. Take care.
Hey, God bless.
God bless you, too. Thank you.